More than 7 years in the making, the book In a Different Key, The Story of Autism, is now in paperback. It's by Emmy Award-winning correspondent John Donvan and Peabody Award-winning television news reporter Karen Zucker. They weave together largely unknown stories of previously unsung heroes whose ingenuity, perseverance, and resilience offer new insight into some of the seminal moments of the past near century. As they explain, it is striking to see how ordinary people, so often parents who are merely following an instinct to do right by their child, were at the forefront of creating major social change and a realignment in the priorities of scientific research when it comes to autism. In a Different Key presents autism as a revealing lens on society's mixed reaction and mixed record in the slow-moving project that is the acceptance and celebration of those who are different. John Donvan is a correspondent for ABC News and host moderator of the Intelligence Squared U.S. debates. Karen Zucker is a 25-year veteran of ABC News and producer and co-writer of the PBS series Autism Now. And it's a great pleasure to welcome John and Karen back to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, and the pleasure is ours to be back with you.
Very nice to have you on the program. We had you here about a year ago when this book came out in hardcover. What have you learned in that year since, and really from the reaction of the book?
That personal stories really connect with people. We structured the book around personal stories, and we're really glad that we did for a couple of reasons. One is that they become somewhat universal. We told many stories of parents fighting to give a place in the world to their kids, and we found that parents in general found this book inspiring. It didn't matter whether they had a child on the autism spectrum or not. And then people who were actually nowadays still in those struggles and in those battles, they came to our book events when we spoke at bookstores and at schools, and we've been doing a lot of that. We've been all over the country on book tour, still not over. People would come up to us afterwards and just say thank you for telling me about this past, for letting me know that my child and our family are part of an important history, and we're inspired to go forward. So that it's been very, very gratifying in a way that really was our goal, wasn't it, Karen?
Absolutely. The other thing is we found that there is still a lot of struggle out there, and families shared their stories, and we saw that to some extent the point of our book was to look at the past to move towards the future, and that people still have a lot of work ahead, and families are still struggling to figure out the future for their adult children.
It is to be noted that both of you have a connection to autism. And Karen, I'll begin with you. Of what got you first interested in the topic?
I have a 22-year-old son with autism, and John and I were working together at ABC News. As you said, I'm a producer, and John is a correspondent. And soon after he was diagnosed, we started working together and created a series called Echoes of Autism because we wanted to educate the public. In 1999, 2000, really nobody was talking about autism. And there was there's no silver bullet. And so we wanted to tell the stories of how you could really help people with autism, how you could understand them, both for families who are affected by it and for people who don't know anything about it.
And for you, John, there was also a connection.
My wife's from Israel. She's a doctor in Washington named Renit Mashouri, and her brother, who still lives in Israel, his name is Dror Mashouri, he's about 50 years old, he has autism, and she grew up in a household with autism, and her mother became a very, very important activist in Israel and changed a lot of things for the better on behalf of her son and then for other families. She's retired from that field now, but when I learned from my wife what it was like to grow up with disability in the household, and her brother is very, very profoundly affected by autism. He can't speak and he can't live independently in any way. I recognized that for those of us who don't know that experience, there's two different universes. And I became interested in what was that universe that my wife grew up in? As a, you know, Karen and I use the term nowadays for people who don't know very much about autism, we call them the civilians. I was a civilian. I didn't mm-hmm. know what it was like to live in a household that didn't have disability. And so I set out initially to kind of try to understand my wife. And then when Karen and I started teaming up to do the work about autism for ABC, that just clicked. And I now feel I understand much more about the reality of life with a severe disability in the home.
In the well over a decade and a half that you've been working together and working on the story in ABC and, of course, this book, what do you think, John, is the most significant change that has occurred since you first started covering? Because a lot has happened in that two-decade period of time.
Two things, the really big two things that happened. The first one is that many more people know about autism than ever before. Even when we started 15 years ago, and Karen first pitched the idea of doing a story about autism to our bosses at ABC, they were reluctant because they'd never heard of it and they didn't know what we were talking about. So that's changed a lot. The other thing that's changed, and it's even changed since we started our work, and write about this in the book, is that for the first 50 or 60 years of the autism story, the driving forces for change and the real power figures were parents of children with autism. And that's now changed dramatically. The parents are still very involved. But as the idea of autism expanded to include people who are very, very capable of organization, of articulation, of campaigning, people who have autism themselves now stand in the front lines of the community as leaders in some ways and pushing for change themselves. So it's hearing from the people who have autism themselves, people not like my brother-in-law. By the way, my brother-in-law can express himself through painting. He's a really interesting visual artist, but he's not somebody who could put together a political campaign. But there are people now on the autism spectrum, since it's so broad to include them, who can do that. And so that's been, I would say, the second big change. More people know about autism than ever before, and people with autism are speaking for themselves.
Karen, what kind of stigma have you had to overcome in just explaining this to other people, of perhaps ideas that readers and civilians, as you call them, the civilians have in regards to autism?
Well, you know, it's interesting, just like the spectrum, which is now huge, from someone who's very, very severely disabled,
right,
to someone who, as John was saying, can speak and advocate for themselves. It's also that way with people who understand and have been in touch with autism and have an awareness of it. So you can run into somebody who, because there's so much more awareness now than ever before, that really can respect and sort of go the 15 extra yards to connect to somebody who's different. But there are still a lot of people out there that, which is somewhat amazing to us, that are just still, you know, unsure of or don't understand. And so when people don't understand things, they often fear them. And then they react in a negative way. So we still have a long way to go for people to see. You know, people aren't used to having adults with autism out in the community. And that's what I find on a personal level, having a 22-year-old young man who was a little boy who was much more accepted as a little boy than he is as a young adult, because as a young adult, he seems strange to people, and people need to know that that's okay, that being different is okay, and they're not used to it as much as they are with children.
Can I jump in with something else on that, Joe?
Absolutely.
One of the, you know, by looking at the past, we talk about a lot of things that have changed, and one reason that this challenge is now there for adults with autism to be accepted in the community is because they are given at least access to the community. As we say in our book, that's a new thing. Until about 30 years ago, people with autism were put away in institutions and never heard from again. So there was no issue of, well, am I going to have to, you know, if I'm one of the civilians, am I going to have to work with this guy who seems so strange in my office? That issue wasn't there. Or there's a community, there's a house in my neighborhood where there's a couple of adults who have this thing called autism, you know, sharing a house together. Do we all feel comfortable about that? Those issues weren't there before. So in a way, the challenges exist because of progress. And the progress is that the institutions were closed down. Society made a choice that that was no way to treat somebody who was on the autism spectrum and who was different. But as Karen's saying, we still have to go the other part of it. Well, now that the institutions aren't there and there's a sort of halfway commitment to people who are different being among the rest of us civilians, we have to go the extra part, which is if there is somebody in our office who may be, I don't know, you know, typical things, somebody may rock back and forth in his chair or may make some sounds from time to time. We have to kind of learn that that's okay, I'm going to roll with that. I'm not going to ostracize somebody, stigmatize somebody, refuse to be somebody's friend. And that's kind of where we are now in this sweep of things. Because of the progress in the past, new challenges emerge for the future.
John Donovan and Karen Zucker are our guests. They're the authors of the new book, In a Different Key, The Story of Autism, now in paperback from Broadway. Karen, you do write about the history of that term, autism spectrum, and I'm curious a little bit about that history, but also what the two of you make about that and the pluses and minuses of using that term.
What's interesting is, depending upon how much you know about autism, the definition of it keeps changing. And right now, the definition as it stands is it's called an autism spectrum, and that includes everyone. Everyone from someone who needs support for their entire life because they can't care for themselves, and people who really are independent and are proud of who they are. And it makes for a very large group of people who are, to some extent, totally different, even though they have a thread of being the same. And the spectrum as it stands today, I personally feel, is very complicated because they're not all the same. And people need different supports, and people need people to understand them differently. People who are independent and in the workforce have to be accepted in a different way. And when you have different sets of autism, we say sometimes if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Mm. So I feel lumping them all into one category is very complicated, and you lose the ability to really focus on the needs of the individuals.
Karen's right. It's a really complicated question because it conflates together anybody into one group, anybody who has any trace of what's considered an autistic behavior, and that might be difficulty making eye contact, and that difficulty may show up in somebody who is a college professor, and it may also show up in somebody like my brother-in-law. And there are a list of autistic traits, and there's been sort of a decision made by the professional community about 15 to 20 years ago. Let's kind of call all of this the same thing. And there was a good reason for that, and that was because the people like that college professor who couldn't make eye contact may have had a lot of real struggles in his life, getting hired, getting married, going out, being understood, being accepted by other people because he was different. But he was independent, he could function, he could go to school. But he needed help, and there was no help because nobody saw his situation as justifying support. So once the idea of bringing everybody in on the spectrum was launched, that gave the access to people at that end of ability to get support also. And in that sense, the word autism opened the door for them. And we have friends, Karen and I have friends and people we write about in the book, like Alex Plank, is on the autism spectrum. He was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which was seen as a form of autism. The term's no longer actually in the books. John Robison is a very, very well-known and fantastic guy, and he's got Asperger's syndrome diagnosis also, and he's written books. He's written bestsellers. He owns a really successful car restoration business. He's just a lovely guy. He's on the autism spectrum. And in a way, guys like Alex started a fantastically successful website also for people on the spectrum called wrongplanet.net. It's still there. And guys like them are the fact that they have the autism label, there's a great thing about that, which is that they destigmatize autism. They go out and they meet people and they charm people and they make people laugh and they make people comfortable and they're a little bit different. But they're not so different that it puts people off, the civilians. The people sort of embrace them and like them and get a better impression of autism. So that's all a good thing. The flip side of that, though, is that there are people who just are never going to be like John or Alex and Karen and I report on them also a lot in the book, and more recently we did a PBS series about a young man out in Arizona named Matt, who's never going to speak and never be independent and never write a book and never drive a car and never complete a sentence, really, a real sentence. And he's going to need a real commitment from society, big money, to be safe, to be given a life that in a place that supports him and respects him and celebrates him, even though he doesn't have many, many skills and charms. And the difficulty with putting the same word on our friends Alex and John Robeson and Matt is these things are so different that people can forget how much help Matt needs, how much really enormous amount of help he needs, because they see Alex and John out in the world kind of being charming and wonderful, which they are, by the way.
So they're profoundly different, but they're given the same definition.
So that's why we say this. Yeah, that's why we say this spectrum concept is it's got its pluses and its minuses, and it's really, really complicated.
We're talking about autism this morning with authors John Donvan and Karen Zucker. They're the authors of the book In a Different Key: The Story of Autism. I must ask this question, I guess, because it is important within the context of the book, but also in our current political situation. You write in the book about the false belief that vaccines cause autism and how that has been so persistent. And it's a very interesting part of the book. We now look at a new administration in its beginning days, and a president who seems to have very deep thoughts on this particular issue of vaccines and about autism. And I'm curious as to how the two of you feel about the great strides that have been made over the 15 years since you two have started reporting on this and where this could be leading now.
Well, you can't talk about this question without getting somebody mad. By the way, that's true about a lot of things in the discussion of autism. We come to the conclusion in the book that we're going to stick with what the preponderance of science says. And the preponderance of the science that has been done on vaccines says that there is no broad correlation between vaccines being given to the population and rates of autism going up in the population because of that. It might look that way. But there are all sorts of reasons that it looked that way, and that wasn't the case. And that was the story back in 2001 to 2002 to through about 2006 or 7. That was the panic, that there was this huge rise in autism rates because there was a huge rise in the number of kids getting and in amount of vaccines that kids were getting. Well, it wasn't crazy to think that. There was a big rise in the number of vaccines that kids were getting. And there was an apparent increase in the number of cases of diagnosed autism. But that apparent part, it turns out there are too many other explanations for why there were more diagnoses of autism. And it broke down under close examination. This correlation showed not to be really the correlation that it seemed to be or to be in any way causal. So we come down on the side of saying, look, science looked at it. It was worth looking at. Science looked at it. Parents who experienced it were not at all crazy to think that maybe there was a connection. No scientist can say that in some small number of individual cases, maybe there was a connection. It hasn't been proven, so I'm not saying that, but it hasn't been disproven. But what has been disproven is the notion that there was a big spike in autism rates because of there was an increase in the use of vaccines. So that's one side of it. And the reason that was important, though, and really was important, it's the one reason that everybody started really focusing. You know, I said before, nobody had ever heard of autism 15 years ago when we started reporting on it. The reason that people started talking about autism was because of the vaccine scare. And in a bizarre way, that did more to raise awareness of autism than anything that had ever happened before. Because, again, the civilians started thinking, oh, my gosh, do I have to worry about this when I take my kid in for a vaccine? And so that started a discussion that had never taken place before.
But as far as the Trump connection and what he has said personally about vaccines and about autism, what does that mean, do you believe, for the future and for research going forward?
I mean, the concern is is that we've already, as a society, spent a lot of money researching this and have come to scientific conclusions. And what we really need to be doing today is providing services, looking for new ways to help people with autism, new treatments, potential to find out what causes autism. There are still so many unanswered questions, and there's still so much to be done. And it all costs money. And to sort of revisit something that we know we have found the answers to, when there are people who need places to live and there are waiting lists and there are, 80% of adults with autism live at home, I feel that we should be focusing on that and not revisiting something that
it really is the one thing that we've kind of answered definitively about autism. There's so much about autism we don't get. That's kind of the one thing that was looked at pretty intensively for over a 5 or 6 year period and was answered. So the fact, to get to your question about the president elect, the president as of January 20th, President Trump as of January 20th, talking about this, it's caused a lot of consternation in the scientific community, for sure. But as I said before, you can't talk about many aspects without getting people mad. There are people, definitely, who are, still believe that there's a connection. They're cheering. They're thrilled that this is happening. I think Karen and I both feel, and that's why we say it in the book, that the question really was one of the few questions really looked at. Was it looked at to the degree, to the nth degree, to turning over every last rock possible that the advocates for these kinds of investigations want? No. But it's at a point it was chasing the negative, and it just got to the point where scientists said there's really no more reason to keep looking at this. That's not how science works. You look for signals, and there just aren't signals. We looked at the signals, and they turned out not to be real.
The name of the book is In a Different Key, The Story of Autism by John Donvan and Karen Zucker. It is out in paperback from Broadway. John and Karen, thank you very much for being with us once again. Best of luck in your continued work.
Thanks so much for having us back. It was a pleasure.
Again.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, In a Different Key, The Story of Autism by John Donvan and Karen Zucker. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.